Take your Bibles, if you will, and turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. We will be touching on a number of scriptures this evening, but we will base ourselves here to begin with, and you'll be able to follow from there. Jennifer and I were traveling before we had any children to the country of Peru. And we saw amazing things that the Incas had built, some of their temples and some of the ruins in these different places, Machu Picchu. It was interesting to me that the guide that we had talked about how great the civilization was and claimed that civilization as his own, even though it had been gone for close to 500 years. But even more fascinating was the idea that he thought that the Incas did not sacrifice human beings. They did indeed make many sacrifices throughout those years, and quite a few of them were human sacrifices. That's the first thing that I always think of, for some reason, whenever I think of the Incas or even the Mayas or the Aztecs in Central America. They always appeared in my eye as very bloody and cruel people. They took vengeance on their enemies and whoever had wronged them by sacrificing to them to their gods, thinking that was going to give them power in some way, shape, or form. When I was young, before the Lord saved me, I thought a very similar way about the ancient Jews and how many sacrifices that they had made, even though there was no human sacrifice there. Since the Lord saved me, and as a Christian, I've come to a much greater understanding of what the Jews were doing, even though I still can't understand what the Incas and the Aztecs and the Mayans were doing. But as a Christian, the question sometimes arises, it does in my head, whether it does in yours or not, is should we sacrifice? Should Christians sacrifice? Now, I hope that you all understand that when I ask that question, I'm not talking about a bloody sacrifice. The sacrifice of Jesus Christ was sufficient for our spiritual needs, in the sense that everything that I need to be a Christian was there on that sacrifice. Everything that I need to live as a Christian was there on that sacrifice. So when I talk about a Christian making a sacrifice, it is not something that I say to add to anything that Jesus Christ has done. That would be impossible to do, and also contrary to Scripture to try and do. Anytime that you add to Christ, you have actually taken away from Him. You've taken away from the sufficiency of what He's accomplished. But the Bible talks about, at numerous occasions, the need for sacrifice. The need for us to sacrifice. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, we see this. Peter says, "Wherefore, laying aside all malice and all guile and hypocrisies and envies and all evil speakings, as newborn babes, desire the sincere milk of the word, that ye may grow thereby." So he's telling the people that he's speaking to, lay aside these things that you have been doing. The malice that you've had towards others, the guile, where you're trying to deceive people to accomplish what you want. The hypocrisies, where you're acting like something, but you're really not that thing. The envies of trying to get what other people have. Speaking evil of others. Get rid of those things. And as newborn babies, newborn babies always desire milk. Well, as they desire milk, you should be desiring the Word of God. That should be the thing that you want the most, because you'll grow just like a baby grows off of that mother's milk. You'll grow off of the milk of the Word. In verse 3, he says, "If so be, ye have tasted that the Lord is gracious." If you've tasted of the grace of God through Jesus Christ, that's what your life should reflect. "To whom coming," this is speaking about Christ, "as unto a living stone, disallowed indeed of men, but chosen of God and precious." He was a living stone, and later on in this chapter he talks about him being the chief cornerstone. But verse 5 says, "Ye also, as lively stones, are built up a spiritual house." and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. So that's the foundation. First off, he's speaking to Christians. He's not speaking to people that you need to sacrifice to become a Christian. That has to be clear. He's speaking to believers, to those who have tasted of the forgiveness of sin through the blood of Christ. That's the main sacrifice that we need to worry about. But the question comes, should we have spiritual sacrifices as believers? He calls us lively stones. Now, throughout the scriptures, you'll see references to a stony heart, a cold heart. That's before you're a Christian. Paul says to the Ephesians in chapter 2 that it was a dead heart. You were dead in your trespasses and sins. But when someone is born again, that wicked and deceitful heart that Jeremiah talks about has been made a new creation. And it's now a lively heart. It's got the Spirit of God within it, and it's a lively stone. It's a living stone. It's no longer a dead, stony heart. It's a lively heart. It's alive. And that stone is being fit together with other stones on top of the cornerstone, on top of that foundation stone that is Jesus Christ. You see, nothing can be done without Jesus Christ as the foundation stone. Nothing is possible to happen in that sense. If you don't know about the sacrifice that Jesus Christ made, as in a personal relationship with Him, as in knowing that sacrifice has been applied to you, that's the main sacrifice you need to be concerned about. The sacrifices I'm talking about are something you don't need to worry about, are something that you don't need to concern yourself with, because they'll do you no good, because all of our good deeds are as filthy rags in God's sight. He's building up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood. People in the United States, and I've seen it even more so, people here in England, they think of a church as a building. There have been those that I've spoken with since I've been here, other pastors who said, well, if you don't have a building, they won't come. If you have a building, you'll get people who don't even know what you're preaching show up because they see the building as the church. They see the building as the place where God is, regardless of what's happening in the building. That's the place where God is. Well, that is an incorrect view of the church of God. The local church of God is a spiritual building fit together with spiritual stones. Those stones are built on the foundation that has been laid, which is Jesus Christ and the apostles. That is the scriptures. That's what it should be built upon and fit together. Each of those stones, Peter here calls a holy priest unto the Lord. The Bible, there's many out there in the world today that have priests in their religion. It's a single person that you go to and you may offer confessions to. Or may give you certain sacraments or other things. The Bible never talks about any individual set up above others as a priest other than Jesus Christ. He talks about every Christian as being a holy priest before God. That's important for us to understand because he asks us to make sacrifices. In the Old Testament, who made sacrifices? Well, the priests made sacrifices. Those who had sinned made sacrifices, but the priesthood was set up to make sacrifices for the nation. If under the Old Testament law, if you had done something contrary to God's law, or you wanted to thank God for something, you brought a sacrifice to the tabernacle or to the temple, and you brought it to a priest, who then would take that sacrifice and slay it, and put it on the altar and burn it, whatever the case may be. You didn't do it yourself. The priest did it for you. In God's eternal wisdom, in the New Testament, He has made every believer a priest because we ought to be offering up spiritual sacrifices. Not a bloody animal, not something physical, but a spiritual sacrifice. That's how the building is built. That's how the building is fit together. Now, I'm not going to stand here tonight and tell you what those sacrifices are, what those sacrifices should be for any particular individual. Those things will vary greatly. But I need to tell you about the sacrifice so that you can understand what your sacrifices ought to look like. First off, it ought to be offered with salt. In Leviticus chapter 2, verse 13, Moses writes, "Neither shalt thou suffer the salt of the covenant of thy God to be lacking from thy meat offering. With all thine offerings thou shalt offer salt." Now, salt in ancient times was a method of currency. It was one of the best ways to transfer wealth from one person to another, because you needed salt to preserve food. You needed salt to clean wounds. Salt was the main commodity of things, to the point where our word salary actually comes from the word salt through the Romans, because how much salt was given to each of the Roman soldiers was their salary. That's where our idea of getting paid comes from, and it all starts with the idea of salt. But what's important is when a covenant was made between two parties, there was a meal that was brought together, usually by the person that had more power than the other person. And that meal was brought together, and salt was laid on that meal. It was important because that's exactly what God did with Abraham when he made a covenant with him, and God passed between the animals and ate when Abraham was asleep. And this was a reminder that Moses had written, saying the salt is important because it's a reminder every time you bring a sacrifice of the covenant of God, of the covenant that he has made with Abraham. Every time that you do something and you bring a sacrifice, it has to be based upon the covenant that I've already had. It has to be based on what's already taken place. Otherwise, it has no value. If you're not bringing your sacrifice and you're not laying salt on it, remembering that God had promised through Abraham to do what he's been doing, then your sacrifice has no value, has no merit before God. In the same way, our spiritual sacrifices have to be offered with salt. But it is not the salt, a physical salt, in the idea of the Abrahamic covenant. It is the salt of Jesus Christ. It is the foundation that Jesus Christ is. Later on in Peter, 1 Peter chapter 2, he talks about Jesus Christ as the chief cornerstone. He is the foundation. Every sacrifice that we make has to be made with that in mind. Has to be made with what Jesus Christ has done for us in our minds. It ought not to be done for our own purposes. You can go through the Sermon on the Mount, we've done so, and see all of the different ways which Jesus points out that our actions mean nothing if they're not done for the right reasons, if they're not done with the right motives. Well, the spiritual sacrifices that we're talking about this evening is exactly the same. Our spiritual sacrifices mean nothing if they're not based upon the foundation of Jesus Christ. If we're not doing them for Him and through Him, they mean absolutely nothing. They may look good to men, they may get you praise in the eyes of man, but you'll receive nothing from God. It's to be done for His glory and in His strength. That sacrifice has to be done and has to be founded upon the foundation of Jesus Christ and His sacrifice. And that's where the idea of salt comes in. Every spiritual sacrifice that we make has to follow that same example from the Old Testament. The other vital key to any sacrifice that is made by us is the cost of the sacrifice. How much does it cost? Now, I'm not speaking about financial situations. I'm not speaking about how much money that you take out of your wallet and put into an offering box. I'm not speaking about how much a gift you may give to a particular group is. Or somebody donated an organ, or someone donated this to a particular church. That's not what I'm talking about, not the financial amount. In 2 Samuel chapter 24, we have a good picture of the cost of a sacrifice. To give you a little background on what's taking place in 2 Samuel chapter 24, David was king. He was king of Israel. He had been ruling for quite some time. And at some point during his reign, God was angered with the nation. God was angry with Israel, and God decided he was going to chastise them. And we don't know exactly why he was angry. It was most likely because they were following after different idols, which was the constant sin of the nation of Israel. Just as all of us have a sin that we struggle with, so did Israel, and that was following after these false gods. That's the most likely scenario. And so God said, I'm going to chastise them to bring them back to walking under my path. And he said, I'm going to do this by prompting David. And when he prompted David, David decided he was going to count the people. Not the people in general, like a census nowadays where everyone is counted and you know from the oldest to the least. He was counting the men of war. He was counting the men of war. Now, what's so important about this is back in Deuteronomy, God had said that he was going to watch over Israel. He was going to take care of Israel. And he was going to bless Israel to be as numerous as the stars of the sky. And in numbering the men, it was showing a lack of faith in the provision of God. It was showing a lack of faith in God's promise that he was going to do this and that he was going to watch over them as a people. So David decided he was going to number the people, and his general, the commander of his army, said, David, don't do this. Don't do this sin. It's a wrong thing to do. And David said to Joab, I'm going to do it anyway. And so he sent Joab out and his men, and they went and they counted all the mighty men in the nation of Israel. And they went, and it took them over 9 months to go throughout the land, because they went to every single household. And they found out whether there was any man in that household that could bear arms, that could hold a sword and defend himself and defend the nation. At the end of it, they found 1.3 million men throughout the nation that could bear arms, that could fight for Israel. As soon as they came back and told David the number, the prophet Gad came to David and told him, you've sinned against the Lord. You've done evil in God's sight. And the consequences were going to be difficult. They were going to be difficult for David to bear. And God gave David, through the prophet Gad, three choices. He said, here, I'll have to read it because I'm not going to say them exactly right. In verse 13 of chapter 24, so Gad came to David and told him and said unto him, shall 7 years of famine come unto thee in thy land? Or wilt thou flee 3 months before thine enemies, while they pursue thee? Or that there be 3 days of pestilence in thy land? Now advise and see what answer I shall return to him that sent me. So he said, you could have 7 years of famine. That will be the punishment on the land. Or you could have 3 months where your enemies are going to pursue you. Not speaking of just David, but pursue the nation of Israel. And you will be under their hand for 3 months. Or I will give you 3 days of pestilence, 3 days of disease striking the land. And then David thought about this. He thought about it and he chose 3 days of pestilence. He chose 3 days of a disease, of some type of a plague, to hit the nation of Israel. And at first you wonder, well, that seems a bit strange. Because it was clear there were people going to die because of the plague, because of this pestilence. But he didn't want 7 years of famine. That was a guaranteed thing. There were 7 years where people were going to suffer, where people were going to have hardship. He didn't want 3 months where their enemies were having power over them. Because God, yes, is in control, but maybe the enemy goes too far. He said, if I am placing myself in the hands of God, maybe God will have mercy. Maybe God will be kind to us. And so the Lord sends a pestilence. He sends a pestilence throughout the land, and I'll read it in verse 15. So the Lord sent a pestilence upon Israel from the morning even to the time appointed. And there died of the people from Dan even to Beersheba 70,000 men. When the angel stretched out his hand upon Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord repented him of the evil and said to the angel that destroyed the people, it is enough, stay now thine hand. And the angel of the Lord was by the threshing place of Arunah the Jebusite. And so David was right. God had mercy. He didn't touch the city of Jerusalem, where the capital was. And it stopped. He stopped the angel that was destroying the people right there at the threshing floor of Arunah the Jebusite. Now David, he's happy by this, that the Lord has stopped. Verse 17, David spake unto the Lord when he saw the angel that smote the people, and said, Lo, I have sinned, and I have done wickedly. But these sheep, what have they done? Let thine hand, I pray thee, be against me and against my father's house. And Gad came that day to David and said unto him, Go up, rear an altar unto the Lord in the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite. And so David had seen the angel of the Lord. The Lord allowed him to see the angel that was giving this disease, giving this plague. And he prayed to the Lord and asked for forgiveness. And the prophet Gad comes unto David and says, The Lord has answered you. Now you need to go to the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite, because this is where the angel of the Lord stopped. And you need to go there and you need to sacrifice unto the Lord. And so David gets up and he goes. He goes and he's going to go and he's going to build an altar unto the Lord. And he's going to make a sacrifice there on that threshing floor. Now when he's going up there, he is seen by Araunah. He is seen by the man who owns the property. And David explains to Araunah exactly what he has to do. That he has to sacrifice to the Lord there on his threshing floor. Araunah, being a kind and generous man and loving his king, offers everything to David. He says, you can have the land. You can have the threshing floor. Not only that, I've got some oxen here. I've got the wood that are for the plow and the yoke. Everything you need. Just take it, build your altar, sacrifice the oxen. It's all yours. It says in verse 23, all these things did Araunah, as a king, give unto the king. And Araunah said unto the king, The Lord thy God accept thee. And the king said unto Araunah, Nay, but I will surely buy it of thee at a price. Neither will I offer burnt offerings unto the Lord my God of that which doth cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. And David built there an altar unto the Lord and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. So the Lord was entreated for the land, and the plague was stayed from Israel. What's the point? The point was David was unwilling to make a sacrifice that didn't cost him anything. That cost him nothing. You see, he's the king. People will want to give him things all of the time. You look at the Old Testament and you see what it costs someone to give a lamb. It's normally costing them very much. That was their livelihood. They were shepherds. When you make a sacrifice, you no longer have what you've sacrificed. It's no longer yours. It's gone somewhere else. So David comes and he says, Araunah, I need to make a sacrifice unto the Lord. Araunah says, you can have everything you need right here. And he says, no, that's not acceptable. It didn't cost me anything. How can I say it's a sacrifice? Nothing has been taken away from me. It needs to cost me something if it means anything to God. And so he says, I'll buy it from you at a fair price. And he pays him 50 shekels of silver. And he buys the land. He buys the land and he buys the oxen, and he buys the implements. And he probably buys the sheep. Buys everything that he needs and makes the sacrifice before the Lord. And that's the idea behind what we ought to be doing when we make a sacrifice. It doesn't matter if it's time, it doesn't matter if it's money, it doesn't matter if it's effort, it doesn't matter what it might be. It ought to cost us something for it to be a true sacrifice. This threshing floor is a fascinating picture, and I've probably said it before, but I don't ever get tired of saying it. But this is, throughout the scriptures, an important place. Because this is where Abraham was going to offer his son Isaac. And God stayed his hand. That place became the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite. It's a flat rock on a high hill on Mount Moriah. David buys it. He offers a sacrifice there that stops the plague. That's also the place where Solomon, his son, builds the first temple. It's also the place where Zerubbabel, when he comes back from exile, builds the second temple that was then expanded upon and enlarged by Herod. It's the temple that Jesus Christ walked through. It's the temple that Jesus Christ taught in. He's the temple that he did so many miracles around. It's what he called the house of God. You think about that. going through, that the priests and the Pharisees and the Sadducees then convicted the Son of God just outside of that temple, and then they sent him outside that city gate to sacrifice him. And the ultimate sacrifice was made. That threshing floor has a lot of importance. It wouldn't have had that importance to David or to Solomon if it hadn't cost them something, if there hadn't been a price paid for it. Now, I'm not here to stand here and tell you exactly how much something is worth for you to sacrifice it to God. But it ought to cost us something to make a sacrifice unto the Lord. Can you part with whatever you're thinking of sacrificing without feeling a sense of loss of not having that anymore? Whether it be money, whether it be anything, whether it be your time, whether it be going to talk to someone that you didn't feel comfortable talking to. Ask yourself those things. Ask yourself, if you didn't have it anymore, would I really feel the loss of it? Because if the answer is no, then it's not truly a sacrifice on your part. And if before you say, well, this is a wonderful Old Testament example, but it's just that, an Old Testament example, I want you to listen to what Jesus Christ says in Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12, verses 41 through 44. And Jesus sat over against the treasury, which is there at the temple, the same place that this story with David just took place. This is the same mount, the same setting completely. Jesus sat over against the treasury, and beheld how the people cast money into the treasury. And many that were rich cast in much. And there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in two mites, which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples, and saith unto them, Verily I say unto you, that this poor widow hath cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For all they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living. Now you hear that, and that's a common story that's been told throughout the ages, but it means a lot more than sometimes we let it mean. Here is Jesus, and he's watching the treasury. And he says to his disciples, he knows exactly what people are casting in because he's the Son of God. Now, they may see people just casting a little bit in. I don't think the widow went in and said, ooh, here's two mites, I'm going to make sure everybody sees what I'm putting into the treasury. She probably sheepishly did it because that's all she had. Now, there were probably others who dropped great big bags of money in because they wanted others to see it. We read about that with the Pharisees, that they wanted all the praise. And Jesus says to his disciples, here is a wonderful example, a wonderful teaching moment for you. This widow has cast in two mites. Cast in the lowest amount of money possible for someone to have. And this is all she had. She didn't have anything else. And she has put in more into this treasury than all the other people. The way you read this, verse 43, you can read it that any other individual has put in, or even all of them combined. You can read it either way. She did more for the temple of the Lord than any of them did in the eyes of God. Now, those two mites wouldn't have done much for the priests. It wouldn't have given them much to go buy bread for the table. It wouldn't have given them to buy much to make the oil that goes into the lampstand. It wouldn't have done much for them to keep the temple clean. But to the Lord, it meant everything compared to those people that could pay for everything. That's the idea behind our sacrifice. It's not about how much you give. It's about how much it costs you to give what you give. Now, I'm not talking about money. It may apply in money, but I'm talking about anything that you do, no matter what the sacrifice might be. This widow, she gave everything and left nothing for herself. That was, in Jesus' eyes, a greater sacrifice. Now, if someone walked in and said, oh, we're going to give you £1 million to help you with your church, I said, wow, that's wonderful. It's going to help us tremendously, somehow or other. But if they had £500 million, that £1 million wouldn't seem like a lot for them. It would seem like a lot to us, but not to them. Now, if someone walked in off the street and they had 100 pounds total, and they walked in and said, I'm going to give you this 100 pounds to help you. Now, that may not help us very much. It may only pay for a week and a half's rent for the room. But in God's eyes, that 100 pounds would mean so much more than the million because of what it cost the person to give. And that's the point that we need to understand. How much does it cost? You see, our sacrifice, our spiritual sacrifice, ought to be based on two things. It ought to be based on Jesus Christ and the relationship with Him and His sacrifice that He made. Now, we're not building on top of that in the sense I'm adding to it. But we're building on top of it because of it. We are adding to what the Lord has done for us, not in the sense of I'm gaining more in eternal life, but we're working on His behalf. That has to be in the sacrifice. That salt has to be there. And it ought to cost us something. If it doesn't cost us anything, then what's the point? Then it's not truly a sacrifice, is it? So in closing, keep in mind that it has to be through the Lord. It has to be through His sacrifice. It can't be without that. That's why when you think about all of the good people that you've seen throughout your life, all those people that will look wonderful in the eyes of man, that's why sometimes those people will mean nothing before the eyes of the Lord, because their sacrifices are not built upon the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. They're not done with the sacrifice of Christ in mind, because they don't know Christ, because they've never had a relationship with Christ, because they've never been forgiven by Christ. It has to be upon that foundation first. And if you don't know Christ, that's the only sacrifice that you need to think about. That's the only sacrifice you should be thinking about, is the one that He made. He made on the behalf of sinners. That you need that sacrifice. And that's why we point you to Christ.